Your guide to Merseyside sport. The Kickoff.
Radio City Talk.
Delighted to have in the studio for the next 40 minutes. Author, Liverpool fan. Playwright, definitely playwright's main job. Ian Salmon, delighted to have you. Your book, So They Say Our Days Are Numbered, because I was reading basically your introduction on why you decided to write it, and you pay a little bit of tribute to Neil Atkinson and John Gibbons,
yeah,
and their incredible book, Maker's Dream.
Maker's Dream is an excellent book.
Did that give you the inspiration to write your book about the 2015-16 season?
That, amongst other things, yeah. I started rewriting in the run-up to my 50th birthday. I did a daily blog, and just with the idea of exercising the muscle and getting back into writing, because I'd worked in retail for 27 years, I could see redundancy looming on the horizon. So I thought, it's time to actually do what I wanted to do when I was in my 20s. And I started writing the daily blog. About 4 days in, it was a case of, I've got a blank page, I'll write about anything that springs to mind. 4 days in, Joe Cole was transferred. So I wrote a blog saying, wouldn't it be nice if these professional footballers once in a while said, don't bother paying off my contract, lads. I've had a good time here. I've been paid. You know, I'm okay. Put it into the youth academy or something. And a website called Sabotage Times, which was founded by James Brown, who founded Loaded, ex-NME journalist, picked up the piece and sent me a direct message on Twitter. I was so new to Twitter, I didn't know direct messages existed. I could just see his little flag and go, what's that, for about 3 days? When I finally read it, got back some, said, you still want to use it? It was a bit late because it was a bit slow by then. But like, anything else you got? So I started writing match reports for them. I did that for a couple of years. And I got to the point where I thought, last August 2015, we were on holiday, and I thought, well, I've written all this stuff on football over the last couple of years. It's just sitting on websites and people are reading it and I'm getting responses. And I've always prided myself on the fact that people engage with my writing because I can cause arguments quite easily, and have done on many, many occasions with with large claims like, we're going to win the league.
Yeah.
That starts a huge argument. This August was wonderful. The tweets that I got immediately after the Burnley game were magnificent. But I thought, I've got all this writing and it's just sitting there. What I should do is put it together. And so I thought, I stopped writing for Sabotage Times. It was kind of like I'd done 2 years and the website was changing a little bit in the way they reported anyway, so we weren't doing match reports as such anymore. I thought, I'm just going to write this every week. So every week I sat down and wrote. It's my reflections very much on how the season ran, but it's also my reflections in terms of, also inspired by Sacha Nacrani and Karl Kopak's book from last year, We're Everywhere Else, which was about the way the match isn't about the match. The match is about everything surrounding the match. And it's about your family and your friends. It's everything else you do, because nothing exists in seclusion. It's all affected by how you're feeling about everything else at the same time.
You can see that. It's a very personal book. And if you look at, there's so many chapters in it, but quite a lot of them are short chapters. And they're just short narratives. And they read as if you're literally just writing down what's in your head at that moment in time. Some of it's immensely emotional, immensely passionate. Some of it's just a reflection on something. You might be looking at something. But it goes through every game within the season, the calendar season of 2015, 2016. But then there's other bits put in. So if I just picked out this one, the boys of 65. So this is just something, a photo I've shared on Facebook a few times over the last years.
This is So I Cry on Air, isn't it?
Well, no, not really. I just thought it was quite emotional. I mean, it's only a chapter that reads, what, 2 pages long?
Yeah, it's about 2 minutes.
And it's got your Uncle Jimmy.
Yeah.
On this photo.
Yeah.
Who clearly, you know, was very close to you. Do you want to tell
the actual date? What's the actual date of that chapter? I think it's probably going to be 23rd November. Yeah, we just lost me Uncle Jimmy. We lost my dad the year before. Part of my dad was the elder brother. Jimmy was his younger by 2 years. And part of what the book hangs on is that my dad wanted me to take over his season ticket. He knew that he nearly gave it up a couple of years before he passed away. And he decided he didn't want to. He wanted to keep it in the family and he wanted me to take it over. And good enough, you know, there's lots of myths that if you lose somebody in the family, you don't say anything to Anfield because you won't see the ticket. It'll go to a tourist and you'll never see that seat again. And there are people in the main stand who are 135 years old and still go in the game on a regular weekly basis. And I wanted to do the right thing, the honourable thing. Partly because every time you go into the match, you put your season ticket into the little hole in the wall and flash the colour. And mine was flashing orange, which clearly says, this guy here isn't 65. I might look a bit rough, but I don't look 65 yet. So I rang Anfield and said, you know, this is what's happened. My dad wanted to pass the ticket down to me. Is there any way it can be passed over into my name? Obviously, I didn't actually give my name first. I'm not daft. I didn't tell them who I was until I got an answer to the question. But they were great. There was no problem at all. They were like, yeah, just bring in all the necessary paperwork and we'll transfer it over. And it took a few months to transfer over, basically from January to May, because they had a lot on the ticket office. But the ticket became mine last August for the first time. So it's my own season ticket in my own name for my first time ever. I was going to buy one in 1986, and I'm sure we'll get back to that. But it became mine. So it was very much, I had my dad's seat in the main stand for last season, and it was my dad's seat, the seat they'd sat in however long that particular wooden seat had been there, my dad had been sat in it. And we knew that at the end of the season, that seat wouldn't be there anymore because the main stand would change. So that was the other reason for doing it, because it was clearly going to be a definite season of change, and it was going to be a season of change for me, and it was going to be a season of change for the ground itself. So my Uncle Jim was my dad's younger brother by 2 years, and I knew him well growing up. And, you know, as you get older, you lose contact with aunties and uncles. And as you meet up again later in life, and as we're losing my dad, Jimmy, despite not being well himself, was there all the time for the family. He was there with my mum. He was there with us all. And he was unbelievably supportive, more supportive of the man who was as ill as he was at the time, you would imagine to be. And after we lost my dad, I would visit Jimmy with my mum, because he lived out in Prescott, so I'd drive my mum out there. I was in a lucky position where I was just writing full time, so I had availability. And you realise older in life that you communicate with your aunties and uncles on a more level basis, because it's not like, that's my Uncle Jim, this is Jimmy, and he's a cracking bloke. And you don't realise that. Part of what I wanted to in the book was show how we pass things down through the generations. Now everything carries on. And in that particular chapter, that's my dad, my Uncle Len, who passed away in 97, and my Uncle Jim. And they go to Wembley, May of 65. They see the FA Cup lifted. And the FA Cup at the time was the absolute holy grail for Liverpool, because it was the one thing that we hadn't won. It was massive to get the FA Cup, and when the FA Cup was the FA Cup. And that's the point where you reflect, as we were losing Jimmy, that this is three lads going out for the day out in London, going to Trafalgar Square, feeding the pigeons, having a few pints with their mates, having a laugh, going to the game, seeing Liverpool win the cup. And at that point, it was also the point where I realised during a match at one point, that the three of them on that photo, and the photo was in the book, which I'm chuffed that the photo was in the book. I'm delighted it's in there, because it's an iPhone photo of a photo which is 50 years old. Mm. And it's worked well enough to actually be in the book and look good in high resolution. And I realised at that point that I was actually old enough to be the father of all the three men that were in that photo, because they're just lads in their 20s. And they're lads in their 20s in the 60s, in the same way their dad and Lenny's dad was a lad in his 20s in the 30s or 40s, going the match, watching the match, having a laugh with his mates, and doing exactly the same thing that we all still do now. So they were doing in 1965 what I then do in 2016 in Switzerland with my brother and our mates.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's all the same.
Steve Hothersall's kickoff.
This is Radio City Talk.
You're with Radio City Talk. I'm Steve Hothersall. My guest is Ian Salmon, author whose brilliant book, They Say Our Days Are Numbered, is well worth a read if you just fancy something that is going to take you back to the 2015-16 season, the arrival of Jurgen Klopp, the changes in the stadium, a season which gave us a bit of a roller coaster. I won't ruin the entire book, but it's essentially laid out as a periodical, a journey throughout the course of the season. So every chapter, virtually every chapter, is a game. But it's not a match report. It's more a personal reflection on each of them. You did this in time. So you did it as the matches were happening. Yeah. You get home from a match.
Yeah,
on that night you'd go.
I'd write it. I depend on the mood. I'd write it immediately, or I'd write it the next day. It was always written within a day or 2 days of the game. There was one chapter across Boxing Day and New Year's Day. The two matches get written together as one, and the two matches work together as one because they're both two sides of the same problem, basically. It was that point where we were having nil-nils and one-nils, and Benteke, for all his possible issues during the season, was winning games in the last couple of minutes for us. You know, the amount of points that you look back at Christian Benteke and go, he had a terrible season. And you look, well, he's solely responsible for probably about 8 points last season. And this is one of the things that I wanted to do with the book. I wanted to be honest to how I felt at the time, because I didn't want to be any kind of revisionist history where I look back and go, well, this is what the season actually meant. In the first few weeks, I think the Christian Benteke is going to be a massive success, and he's making Mignolet's distribution look good because he's winning balls in the air. He looks like he's going to win them. He scores those phenomenal goals at the beginning of the season, and then it becomes the Benteke conundrum, and you're not entirely sure what player he is or whether he fits, or whether he fits the Klopp system, whether he fits the Rodgers system. And I didn't want to go back and write in chapter one, well, I don't think this lad's going to work out. I think by the end of the season he'll be on his way, because that would be lying, because I thought he would work.
Is your opinion different now?
When
you read back what you've written?
When I read back what I've written, I with the benefits of hindsight, you look and go, well, he had moments, and I don't think it was entirely his own fault. I think there are moments when I'm critical of him early on and point out that he's actually on the shoulder of the last defender. He's looking to move. He's on his toes. You can see the shape, but the ball's not coming to him. Maybe it's the other lads just don't trust what he's going to do with it. And it's hard to get to the bottom of that and to ever really know that feeling of whether they believe in the player in front of them or not. Be looking and go, well, either they're not seeing him or they're deliberately not doing it. So I think very much it was an experiment that didn't necessarily work. And I think it was very much a Brendan Rodgers signing rather than... Our best signings have come from the much maligned transfer committee. I think I talk about the much maligned transfer committee a few times in terms of they shouldn't necessarily be as maligned as they were. I think we're past that now.
You also talk about local music.
Yes, yes, it does get mentioned once or twice.
It's obviously quite passionate, a part of your life, isn't it? So that was important to you that you put it in here.
Yeah.
There's a chapter here, Field in South Liverpool. You're talking about getting off the train at Aintree. And then you go on to talking about the Liverpool International Music Festival and bands that... are important to you, I suppose. Yeah,
the bands that I grew up with. It's another thing that we've been very lucky with in Liverpool. We have some of the most magnificent songwriters that have ever lived. I'm not even talking Lennon McCartney. Obviously, they're in a world of their own. But going through the 80s into the 90s, going through now, we have such a culture of strong local music and great acts. There are fantastic acts knocking around now who aren't getting national acclaim because the world wants to watch X Factor. And we have musicians in Liverpool. If you throw a stone in Chair Street, you will find a better musician than you will ever see on Jules Holland. They're walking around town. There are magnificently gifted people out there. And I've been lucky to grow up in a period where, I mean, the International Music Festival, I'm talking about the fact that the Bunnymen are playing, and some will regard them as a nostalgia act, and for that day, possibly they were. But for some of us, we've been watching them every year for the last 30 years, and they've never been anything less than imperious. I know, I only realised when I was reading it back for the edit for the electronic version of it, for the Kindle version, exactly how many times I mentioned Mick Head in there and exactly how many times I had seen him play last year. I'd seen him quite a bit.
But more than most.
More than most. Well, he's possibly the most, probably, possibly, arguably the most gifted songwriter we have working at the moment. He's an incredible songwriter. He's recording a new album. I was lucky enough in 2014 to produce a film of his concert at St. George's Hall. So we had towards the end of the book, we had the premiere of that in the Plaza in Crosby, and there was a DVD made, very limited run, which we sold out of in basically a day. But I was lucky enough to work alongside a musician who's music I've been following for 30 years, and to contribute something to it in a little way. So that's why it's in there, because, yeah, I wrote for the Anfield Rap a while back saying that I came to football quite late. I came to football in my late teens, early 20s, when I really got into it. I'd gone early in that, but I really got into it as I was going towards, you know, the early 80s. And I was always more music-based. I was playing in bands. And I was more passionate about music than I was about football. So I came to that a bit later, but I came to it at a very good time. The 80s was an excellent time to come to football, as was the late 70s. Both of my younger brothers were there before me.
Right, we'll quickly touch on two matches which you reflect on here. The Salmon household is split right down the middle, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
There's Blue, which is Mrs. Salmon.
Well, it's not even split down the middle. I'm outnumbered.
Right, so basically 10% is you and 90% is the rest of. But, of course, in this book, so two games I'll just quickly look at. One is the 4-0 battering of Everton.
Yes.
But you're incredibly light with that chapter. You almost skirt over it, I think. That wasn't influenced by Mrs. Salmon, was it?
I honestly don't think so, because I didn't believe for a second that she would read the book. Because as much as she has started reading the book, yeah. I don't know how far she's got into it. And, you know, obviously she's very proud of the fact that I've done it.
She skipped to that chapter straight away.
I don't think she's gone anywhere near that chapter. No. That's we don't talk about. The derby in our house is easier. If it's something like a 4-0 thrashing, it's easier. If it's a contentious 1-0 or a 2-1 or... If Dirk Kuyt scores a couple of penalties, then that's a contentious game. That becomes an issue. If Gary McAllister scores a free kick from 40 yards out, I guarantee you we didn't actually talk for a week. We actually didn't. And that was because of the way I decided to celebrate. So it's my own fault. I can't complain about that. But she's Blue. My son, they're both season ticket holders at Goodison. My son is a season ticket holder in the lower Gladys Street. So he'll be proud of the description. He's as bitter of Blue as you could possibly find. So possibly subconsciously, I didn't go for it. But I think also the fact that it was such an easy game. It was a game where Everton just had nothing. They just didn't turn up. They didn't show. Martinez got everything wrong that he could possibly get wrong. I think it was summed up by the moment where Stones is beaten for, I think it's the third goal, has a little sit down and then gets subbed. And it was kind of...
straightforward.
It should have been eight or nine. The bit I was worried about is the bit in the final where I pop into a pub for a moment and... I don't think my wife and son know about the song about that match yet. The ball, they never touch the ball. I don't think they know that. I'm waiting for them to get to that chapter. That will be a contentious point.
Right, a couple of brilliant chapters. In fact, we're not even going to talk about them because we have to get on to our Match of My Life in a moment. But when you get the book, read Liverpool 4, Borussia Dortmund 3. Everyone has great reflections on it. The top line from Ian is, even typing the score makes me want to cry. And it's quite an emotional little chapter, that one, when it talks about the greatest night of last season. It was.
That's my favourite chapter by a long way. It was my favourite to write. It was written first thing the next morning. Written with I wanted to be in the rhythm of the game, I wanted to have the passion of the game, and it was the one piece that the publishers wanted me to rewrite because they wanted some full stops in there occasionally. And it was kind of like, this is a paragraph with no full stops. I'm like, well, the last chapter of Ulysses by James Joyce is 27 pages with no full stops needed, okay with it, but that argument's not going to wash.
Radio City Talk.
Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.